This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this afternoon at TSN1290.ca, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday afternoon. It's our NHL trade deadline preview show. We will spend the majority of the program going team by team, division by division, getting you set for Monday's NHL trade deadline, looking at what each team could be selling, what they would be looking to buy, and everything in between. Follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. And gentlemen, good afternoon to you both. Always one of my favorite shows to do, the trade deadline preview show. You know, so much to talk about with the deadline only 48 hours away.
Yeah, it's always a fun show to do, and it's always a fun time of the year, especially when Monday comes around. And I know Richie's going to be joining Rick on Monday during the trade deadline show on TSN 1290. It's always fun because you never know what's going to happen. I know people are worried that there aren't going to be as many trades, but there always seems to be a trade that shocks everybody. And for me, it's always an exciting time because to me it signals that the playoffs aren't that far away.
It is. I mean, this is when you get to see where a team stands, right? That's the biggest thing here. The teams tell their players, do they think they have a good chance of making it at least a round into the playoffs or giving themselves a very good chance, or do they think they're sellers? And that's what you get to see. So, you know, you see the Jets make a move for Tulusti. Obviously, they're serious about getting in the playoffs and trying to make a run here. You're going to see other teams. There was a trade earlier today with Tim Gleason. You're going to see other teams make, you know, address concerns that they have with the visions of making the playoffs. And other teams, you'll either see stand pat or sell. And I think that'll be an indication to their players and their fans that they don't believe they have a great shot at either making the playoffs or making a dent if they do make the playoffs.
Before we get to Monday and, of course, the NHL trade deadline, the Jets still have a game, and that comes tomorrow afternoon, 3 p.m. on this fine radio station as the Jets and the Los Angeles Kings will do battle in a key game in the NHL's Western Conference. They're both teams sort of fighting with one another for the wild card spot. Of course, the Kings are actually in a divisional spot right now. Big game tomorrow. Some news from Jets practice earlier this morning. Blake Wheeler back on the ice. Sounds like he's going to be taking a regular shift in that game tomorrow. Playing on a line or skating on a line this morning with Chris Thorburn and Adam Lowry. So the lines from Jets practice were Ladd, Little, Frolik, Tulusti, Scheifele, and Stafford, and then Thorburn, Lowry, and Wheeler. And then the fourth line was Gagliardi and Party were both sort of were splitting the fourth line left wing spot with Slater and Peluso, as we have seen that be the fourth line for a while now. Let's talk about tomorrow's game against the Kings. You know, after that Thursday game against the Blues, did you get sort of the impression that the pre-All-Star game Winnipeg Jets might be making a return given how tight checking and how, you know, defensively responsible the team was against St. Louis?
Yeah, you could say that, Drew. That's the way that they want to play. They don't want to open it up too much, and they want to take away your time and space and not really take too many chances. I mean, you really see the Jets take too many chances offensively in that game, to create offense, I should say, in that game. So, yeah, I mean, you know, you and I were talking after the game. If they play that way, they should be safe for the playoffs. It's not the most exciting style, but I don't think Paul Maurice thinks this team can play an overly exciting style if they want to be a successful squad. So I thought they affected his plan very well. I don't think St. Louis played particularly well, and part of that is due to the credit the Winnipeg Jets deserve, and I think part of it is just the Blues are kind of catching the Blues at a time when they're not rolling on all cylinders. But overall, it was a solid performance by a Winnipeg team that seems to be getting a little bit more back to basics, as you mentioned.
Yeah, Richie, I agree with you. I don't think the Blues are playing their best hockey right now, but we expect them to, you know, pick it up here. They've been, you know, amongst the top teams in the Western Conference mm-hmm. for most of the year. So, yeah, Drew, the Jets definitely played better against the St. Louis Blues, and they weren't able to get the 2 points, obviously. But, I mean, I wouldn't be too upset if I'm Paul Maurice and I've gotten 3 out of 4 points. And we said that on this homestand, you know, for it to be a successful homestand, they'd have to get 6 out of 8 points. And, you know, if you can get 3 of 4 points against L.A. and Ottawa, then, you know, you're going to be fine, and there's a good chance that they can do that. So You know, they're still not getting. For me, they're still not at that offensive level that they were prior to the All-Star break. I think they played very well defensively, and I think, you know, to Richie's point, I think if you're Paul Maurice, you're very happy with that game and the way they played defensively against St. Louis. They've been very good at home over the last month or so. Mm-hmm. I think they've only lost one game in regulation. So you're happy, and, you know, I thought Mark Scheifele had a really good game.
He did play well.
Andrew Ladd had a good game. Adam Lowry continues to play well. So you're not just relying on the top line again. As you mentioned, Blake Wheeler coming back, by the way, I would expect him to go back on the top line. We'll see what happens, but that allows Adam Party to not have to play left wing on the fourth line. I'd be really surprised if Party plays on forward again.
You know, I didn't mind Party's game as the fourth line left winger. I thought he was more impactful as the fourth line left winger on Thursday than, say, TJ Gagliardi has been for the last number of games. But I don't want to spend a ton of time talking about the Jets' fourth line because he doesn't play the fourth line.
Yeah, I mean, he did more last game, but he doesn't really play the fourth line at all. So we don't want to spend more time on the air talking about it than they will play in the game tomorrow.
you're right, exactly. So let's talk
quickly. I didn't think the game was, you know, people, I think the standard of hockey, I'm going to go my quick little, because I've been saying this to you and both you guys off air after the game. I think our standard for good game in the National Hockey League has certainly gone a couple levels below what I think is particularly good hockey. I don't think that game on Thursday was good hockey. I think it was simple hockey. Two teams scared to make mistakes because their coaches will lash out at them, which I understand the coaches do this because they want to keep their jobs and think they need to do that to be successful. But I didn't see an awful lot of nice plays. I didn't see an awful lot of crisp passing plays. You saw occasional crisp passing plays, but you saw a bunch of guys who were putting the puck in the corner and were keeping the puck on the outside and five guys around the crease. And that's not exciting hockey. It might be effective hockey, but I hope that the standard for National Hockey League fans and guys and fans paying big-time prices, I hope the standard's a little bit more skilled hockey than what we saw on Thursday night.
And, Richie, you can have exciting 1-1 hockey games, and I agree with you. I didn't think that was one of them. You know, the overtime was obviously exciting, and I thought the third period was probably the best out of the three regulation periods. But it was a very cautious game where you're not trying to make a lot of mistakes. You're keeping everything to the outside. Yep. It's two teams that can both throw their weight around. I mean, St. Louis is a big team, and you know, the Winnipeg is also a big team. So
Andrew Ladd had 10 hits in that game.
He was great. Him and Scheifele, I thought, were the best forwards for the Jets. Yep. But I agree with Rich. I mean, we've seen this really over the last 10 to, you could even go back 15 years, even going back to the New Jersey Devils, really, and into the mid-90s, 20 years ago. Some games are just over-systemized, and you see it's pretty robotic out there.
It was a pretty robotic game, I thought.
And, you know, it's a different vantage point sometimes, depending on, you know, what end of the ice you're sitting in and what kind of... Everyone kind of sees the game a little bit differently.
Sure.
So, and depending on how many pops you have as well, so...
Yeah, exactly.
Just also say this, the game kind of was captured for me in a play, I think it was in the second period. Patrick Bergen, skilled forward. I mean, he probably doesn't produce as much as he should based on his skill level, but skilled forward, St. Louis, playing third line left wing, mind you, but really natural center, comes in one-on-one on Jacob Trouba. He's a very good one-on-one defender. Doesn't try a move. Doesn't shoot it at the goalie. Doesn't even curl back to see if he has support. On a one-on-one, dumps a puck into the corner. I mean, is that what the game's come to?
Yes.
Can you make a play?
Well, no. Nobody
make a play.
Because as we talked about off-air, you
make
know,
a play.
If he tries to make a play there,
and he gets in trouble,
and it's a turnover,
Hitchcock goes crazy.
That's right. So, as he said, you know, over-systemized, and like you said, nobody ever tries to make plays.
No, I know it's successful, but my God.
Right. And
try to make a play.
Not all teams play like that. I mean, Detroit's an exciting team to watch.
Yes, absolutely.
I like LA's an exciting team to watch. Calgary has become an exciting team to watch. Washington, I mean, Nashville this year. There's teams that, and Laviolette obviously has changed the system that they play since Barry Trotz, but some games, I mean, you know what, guys? I mean, we're not trying to say that, you know, hockey has become completely boring. You're just going to get, in an 82-game schedule, you're going to get some games like that.
Well, probably more often than not, just the nature of that many games.
Something I had to say.
Richie, I agree with you. I mean, you look back earlier in the season. Was it November against the Penguins? That game was really exciting.
Right.
I mean, you had the game against Florida where the Jets exploded 8-2. I mean, you've had many exciting games this year, but then you get some duds.
Pittsburgh tries to make plays.
Well, I look back at last year's Western Conference Finals. L.A. and Chicago.
Yep.
I mean, those are two teams that are unbelievably talented, and there's no system that can sort of you know, prevent those teams from getting scoring chances and prevent those teams from getting offense. The problem is there's six teams in the league at that can play like that.
It's just an argument against expansion, too,
because
the more guys you get in, the less will be able to make plays, and the less the coaches will want them to make plays and all that stuff. Anyhow, let's keep going.
Okay, let's talk about the Kings and the Jets tomorrow night, tomorrow afternoon, a key wild card game in the Western Conference. You know, what are you looking at? What's the key to the for the Jets to be successful against the Kings tomorrow afternoon?
Well, you know, I don't think it's a huge difference from what happened last game against the Blues.
Are there similarities between the Blues and the Kings?
In terms of size and how heavy they are on the puck. I think with the Blues, with the Kings, you have more guys who, I think more guys who are going to even probably cause more havoc. I mean, the Blues didn't cause as much havoc going to the net as I thought they would. It wasn't as it was a physical game, but it wasn't like a lot of pushing and shoving. I think you're going to see like Dustin Brown, Justin Williams, those guys, you know, driving the net pretty hard. I think you have some game-breaking skill and guys like Jeff Carter who can really hurt you in transition. But the teams are somewhat similar. I think the Kings will also create a lot more from the back end. I mean, Drew Doughty is better than Pietrangelo, and Pietrangelo's a good player. But Drew Doughty is, you know, you could argue Drew Doughty is the best player in the league right now. And they'll have Sakara now, and they'll be creating some from the back end. So there are similarities for sure, Drew. I think the Kings will open it up a little more and make some more plays. And I think the Kings are probably, well, they're lost two in a row now, but they're playing overall, I think, better than the Blues were. So similar game needed from the Jets. But again, you know, if they're going to be successful, they're probably going to play a very similar style to what they did on Thursday.
Yeah, Richie, I caught the Kings-Ducks game from last night, and the Kings went into the third period with a 2-0 lead, and the Ducks actually were stymied. They had Martin Jones in net.
The Kings did.
The Kings had Martin Jones in net, and Martin Jones hadn't played for well over a month.
Yeah. Tells you Quick will be in the net tomorrow for the...
Quick, 100% Quick will be in the net. And, you know, a few things about the L.A. Kings. The entire year, the Kings have been way too reliant on Jeff Carter and Tyler Toffoli, and then before that, Tanner Pearson. Andre Kopitar, Gabrick, and Brown, they just haven't carried over that success that they had from the playoffs last year. And, you know, last night, Ryan Kessler's line, playing with Cogliano and Silverberg, completely shut down the Kopitar line. And, you know, it was a, you know, relatively low-scoring game. But for the Jets, I mean, they're going to face one of the hottest goalies in the league. Quick's only given up 5 goals in his last 5 starts, I believe. He's got a shutout in there. So Jonathan Quick is starting to play like the Jonathan Quick that we've been used to for the last 4 years. He was really struggling earlier in the season, Richie, but, you know, you've added a defenseman in Sakara, and, you know, I really like that move. And, you know, I said this on Wednesday's midweek show. You can always call up Mike Richards, and you always have Tanner Pearson coming back from injury. So
that's a big one.
I realize those guys aren't going to be in the lineup on Sunday afternoon versus the Jets. But even though the Kings have lost the two last games, they won 8 in a row before that. They're playing way more like they were in the playoffs last season, what we're used to. So it's going to be a tough game. And, you know, to me, shutting down the Toffoli-Carter line, they've got Dwight King up on that line. To me, that's the key, because really, that's the line that I know Kopitar, Gabrick, and Brown is their number one line, Richie, but that Toffoli-Carter line, I mean, Carter is having a great year.
Yeah.
And, you know, that line, shutting down that line is a key for me.
I mean, they're going to have to be, defending the cycle is going to be important, size, and that's going to, you know, we talked about the responsibility of the Jets, you know, big defensemen, and, of course, the centers in terms of defending down low. Guys like Mark Scheifele, who I agree has, he had a really good game on Thursday, especially offensively, and also Jets using their speed. I mean, LA's not the fastest squad out there. They sure don't leave you a lot of space, but they're not the fastest team. So you want to, you know, create a little bit more of a skating game, and you'll be more successful.
Paul Maurice has last change, obviously, given that the Jets are the home team. How do you think he deploys his forward groups and his defensive pairings against the Kings?
Well, I think it's interesting because your Enstrom-Myers pairing is your skating kind of skill offensive pairing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're probably going to employ them more against Jeff Carter, because Jeff Carter is a real good skater. And your Kopitar, Brown, and Gabrick line, if they're going to go with those three, I mean, Gabrick's a good skater, don't get me wrong, but Kopitar and Brown aren't going to be lighting it up speed-wise, so you're probably going to go with either Trouba or Byfuglien against their pairings against that line. And then the other one would play against the Stahl line. And LA will play their fourth line a lot, too, but you'll be less concerned about who plays against that line. So I would probably think the matchups are going to be that way.
Ezzy, in terms of the Jets forward groups, if they do go with the Ladd, Little, Frolik trio as have played together the last couple games, and as Wheeler appears to be playing with Thorburn and Lowry during the practice today, how do you think that you see the Jets forward groups deploying against the Kings?
Yeah, I said personally I think they'll end up putting Wheeler back on the first line. But
and that might happen in-game. That's certainly something that could happen in-game.
It could also happen when they practice tomorrow, too.
Well, there won't be in the game day skate, you're saying.
It could be
a
3 o'clock game.
There won't be a game day skate, is right. You're right there. With the 3 o'clock game.
Well, and if that is the case, it'll probably just be a one-game thing. So, I mean, you're going to go against Drew Doughty, who right now is leading the NHL in ice time at 29 minutes. So most likely Doughty and Muzzin, who have, for parts of the season, been broken up, but they've been together for the last several years. So most likely you're going to see that lineup against the Ladd, Little, Frolik line, if that is the line. And then, as we know, Tulusti, Scheifele, and Stafford are going to be together. And then you're most likely going to go up against Regier and Sekera. I don't want to get these guys confused. Mazaros is a guy who could be traded here. So, those are probably going to be the matchups. And I still, you know, watching the LA Kings last night, you know, the third pair in there with Matt Green and Braden McNabb, I wouldn't be surprised if they make one more move there, because Braden McNabb, you know, is a step below. I actually thought Tim Gleason would be a good fit on LA there, but to me, that's maybe where you can exploit that, you know, with Wheeler coming back. And so, It'll be an interesting matchup. I'm going to go out on a limb and say there aren't going to be 9 goals in this game, though. It's going to be a low-scoring game.
I think you're probably right, given the Jonathan Quick stinginess, and the Jets, if they play like they played against St. Louis, they certainly were stingy as well. Game time tomorrow is, of course, 3 p.m., available here on TSN 1290 and on TSN 3 if you're on television. Let's head to break, and when we come back, we'll look ahead to the Winnipeg Jets and the upcoming NHL trade deadline. Are the Jets done, or do they have another move or two in them? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
Hi, this is Drew Mindell. Some surprises are good, like a big comeback win. Some aren't, like internet overage charges. That's why MTS high-speed internet is unlimited, so you won't be caught off guard by surprise overage charges. Switch to MTS high-speed internet from only $20 a month for the first 3 months. Conditions apply. Call or visit your nearest MTS store for details.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, proper fitting custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com.
My face. My beautiful, beautiful face.
That's good. It's a live performance of Ezzy's commercial. I like it. Anyways, welcome back to the program. 10 minutes before 12:30 in the afternoon. Trade deadline coming up on Monday. The Winnipeg Jets active thus far. Obviously, the big trade involving the Buffalo Sabres, Evander Kane, Zach Bogosian, et cetera, et cetera. And then earlier this week, the acquisition of Jiří Tolusti from the Carolina Hurricanes. What's your impression? Do you think the Jets are still have a trade or two in them for this coming Monday, or are they pretty much going to keep their powder dry and probably this is the status quo going forward into the playoffs?
If I had to bet, I'd say they don't make any more moves, Drew. There are needs. I mean, they need to improve the fourth line. They probably want to add in a fourth line winger on either side, frankly. Preferably the left if you have a choice, and then your left side on D you probably want to improve, but I mean, what are you going to be able to get now in terms of what you're giving up? So I don't think they're going to make any more moves, but if they do make a move, I'm looking, you know, you're looking at probably a 6th round pick kind of trade for a fourth line player who's a little bit of an upgrade over what they have. That's what I would say.
Yeah, I agree 100% with Richie again. I feel like I do that at least 10 times per show.
Yeah, it's a little boring. I prefer if you guys fight.
I do disagree with Richie sometimes, though. It just seems like, you know, right now I agree. But you've seen, as you've mentioned, 2 trades in the last 3 weeks or so here. And the fourth line, sure, I mean, you maybe want to add a veteran presence, maybe a little bit more goal scoring. But see, for me, guys, right before the playoffs, you're going to get the two biggest trade deadline acquisitions that you can get in Matthew Perreault and Ben Sherratt. So I think knowing that Matthew Perreault and Ben Sherratt are going to be coming back, as Richie said, are you going to trade a late round draft pick to potentially get somebody in there? But then when Perreault comes back, Perreault comes back later, end of March, early April. That pushes Tolusti down to the third line. Perreault goes back to the second line where he was playing with Scheifele and Frolik, or for sure Scheifele.
Yeah, Scheifele at Stafford, Scheifele and Wheeler.
Yeah, but Scheifele and Frolik was really good, I found. And then you move Tolusti down to the third line, and then you have possibly a Tolusti, Lowry, Stafford line. Mm-hmm. Thorburn moves back to the fourth line, and then you have Thorburn, Slater, Halaschuk, Thorburn, Slater, Peluso. So to me, the lines, and Richie mentioned, the left side. So, I mean, defensemen, I think, when Sherratt comes back, him and Byfuglien will play together, which they were playing, obviously, very well together. Mm-hmm. So it would be very surprising to me if they made a move. But, again, does Kevin Cheveldayoff think, giving up a late-round pick to get someone for this next little stretch here? Because, as we know, Perreault and Sherratt are still 4 to 6 weeks from coming away, we think. They could come back earlier.
Yeah, I mean, every time they've estimated return dates, they've been way early, so I'm not going to buy that they're going to be out as long as they say they are. I mean,
yeah, it could be 2 weeks.
I think Sherratt is more likely to be out for the entirety of the regular season than Matthew Perreault, simply because he actually underwent surgery, and from our understanding, Perreault didn't undergo surgery.
Right.
I think that right. when you're talking, when you're cutting a guy open versus not cutting a guy open, I think there's certainly a difference. Perreault, I would suspect, I agree with you, Ezzy. I think Perreault, and I don't have any knowledge of this, but I expect Perreault would be back certainly by the end of March or so.
Yeah, that's what Paul Maurice said, that he hopes he would be back before the end of the season, which makes you think that the length that he was going to be out was going to be a max of the first round of the playoffs. But, I mean, the point being, Richie, that they're going to get these two players back either before the playoffs start or when the playoffs start.
Yeah.
So are you going to bring in somebody and then you're almost going to have too many players?
Yeah, I mean, too many players, but not too many useful players, Ezzy. A bunch of these guys wouldn't get claimed on waivers anyways. So, I mean, at the end of the day, the Jets are in a bit of a driver's seat, 74 points, Vancouver, L.A., Minnesota, Calgary, San Jose, all have less points than them. So they don't need to do anything. It's not like they're just on the cusp of falling out and they need to do something to stay in. They're a little more comfortable. That's why I think it's less likely that they make a move.
If they
do make a move, I mean, it's not going to be a significant move, and it doesn't have to be a significant move.
He's made a significant move already.
Of course.
I mean, I think you're looking at, like you said, either a late-round pick for a depth guy, or maybe they get somebody off of waivers, a bunch of guys who were on waivers earlier today. Somebody just to sort of add to the, that you can possibly drop into your bottom, your last line, or your bottom.
Well, the truth is, you want to be able to play the fourth line. So you want to get a fourth line left winger. Likely, they're going to have Slater on for faceoffs and penalty killing. The Thorburn to skate and hit a bit, and he's obviously on the 3-year deal. That's a factor there too. Gagliardi and Party and Peluso. I mean, in reality, they don't want to be playing those guys, with due respect. So then you're looking at a fourth line guy who can come in and allow them to trust the fourth line a little bit more than Paul Maurice does right now.
Well, I thought it was interesting the way he deployed sort of the fourth line of Party, Slater, and Peluso. Party and Slater, in particular, got way more ice time on Thursday against the Blues than they had in previous games because they were used heavily on the penalty kill. Each of those players played more than 2 minutes shorthanded.
Yeah.
I mean, Peluso only played his typical 5 minutes in the course of the game. But for Party and Slater getting up over 8 minutes, I mean, 8 minutes isn't a lot of time by any stretch of the imagination, but that's about 5 minutes more than they played against the Dallas Stars on Tuesday. So he's sort of using Party and Slater especially in Party's case, he's using that fourth line left winger in a penalty killing situation, which is helping to take a couple minutes of the pressure off of the top nine.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't be surprised to see that continue.
And off their defenseman.
And off their defenseman as well, absolutely. And the addition, I mean, getting Wheeler back, now your top nine is, obviously you prefer not to have Chris Thorburn in your top nine, but It's a little more solid than it was when they had Buff playing on the left side earlier in the week because they were just riddled with the injuries and everything else.
Right, and then when Matthew Perreault comes back,
right.
then you move Tolusti down, or depending on if you want to keep Tolusti on the second line, I would move Perreault back to the second line on left wing. I think that's where he's been the most effective.
It'll help your power play, of course.
Yep, it'll help the power play, Richie. And so, really, you know, making the Kane and Bogosian trade to Buffalo for Stafford and Myers and all the other players and picking up Tolusti for the draft picks, you don't really need to make any other moves. And, again, maybe we'll see one move, but I don't think you'll see more than one move.
It wouldn't surprise me if the move that they make, if they do make a move, isn't trading away a player like a Paul Postma to recoup one of the late-round picks that you've traded to Carolina for Harrison
if Paul Postma doesn't factor into the long-term plans and someone offers you a draft pick, he would probably do that.
I guess. I mean, I don't know.
I'm talking sixth round pick again. I'm not talking anything more significant
than
that.
Why would you do that if you're trying to have a playoff race? You want to have as many defense bodies as possible, and you have Klitsma right now and Sherrod out. You have Party, but you need to keep somebody there. I don't know. I don't see the need for that. You could do that in the offseason, right? He's pending RFA, isn't he?
I think he's a pending. He's certainly a pending free agent. I'll look it up right now to see what he is. But, I mean, your point is, you know, your point is valid as well, Richard. It's just something if they tend to do something. He's a pending RFA.
So
if they
want to do
something,
you know,
on Monday.
You need a defenseman if you're going to the playoffs. You don't just trade a guy for a draft pick when you're going to be in the playoffs. You trade him in the offseason for a draft pick if you're worried about that. I don't think they're going to do much. And again, they don't really have to do much. I mean, there's not that dominating team in the Western Conference this year.
And their top line, when completely healthy.
You've seen them play against St. Louis and against Chicago, obviously, this year. And against Nashville. They can beat all those teams.
They can compete against them. If they play St. Louis
series,
in a...
I
think they can beat Chicago, Nashville, seven-game series. I don't think they would beat St. Louis in a seven-game series, but it's possible.
They're not necessarily a just happy to be their playoff team if they make the playoffs.
There's not that many good teams, Drew.
I know. They're going to be able to throw their weight around, and those teams will certainly feel a series against the Jets. You know, they certainly will be noticeable in that series, whether or not they're successful or not. But, you know, put their top nine, when healthy, it certainly can be... It's not as good as Chicago or St. Louis's, I don't think, but it's just as good as Nashville's, if not better. I mean, I think their top nine forward group is just as good as Nashville's.
And it's better than Vancouver's and a bunch of other teams.
Yeah.
So, no, I don't disagree with that.
And if you get the Michael Hutchinson that, you know, gets back to pre-All-Star break Michael Hutchinson, you never know that a hot goalie, why he can't steal a series.
So they're going to win the Stanley Cup?
No, of course they're not going to win the Stanley Cup. But if they get the right matchup, if they get I think them against Nashville in a playoff series isn't as one-sided as the standings would indicate right now. And that's if they don't add anybody come Monday. A healthy defense and a healthy forward group.
They could be Nashville.
Against Nashville?
They could be Nashville right now. With Wheeler back, now with Perreault.
You know, Pekka Rinne has obviously been outstanding, but if he has a slight dip in his performance, there's no guarantee that Nashville can withstand that slight dip. Anyways, getting a little bit ahead of ourselves. We'll see how it happens on Monday and over the coming weeks as we enter into the playoff race. Let's head to break, and when we come back, we'll look at some of the trades from around the NHL earlier this week. The trade deadline has already begun in earnest, so we'll talk about it. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. 12:30 in the afternoon, you're listening to TSN 1290, online tsn1290.ca. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and this segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, the official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey. Conveniently located at Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com.
Drew, you were at Bernstein's Deli yesterday, apparently.
I was. Had a nice lunch there with some of my colleagues, and everybody had a great meal. And there were some first-timers there, and they said they'd be back again after having a great meal there yesterday for lunch.
And you picked up the tab, right?
Sure, let's go with that. That's a good story. From Jets practice, got to give a shout-out to Dave Manouk of LegalCurve.com. Alerts us to this audio. Here is Andrew Ladd at the end of a scrum after today's Winnipeg Jets practice.
Does it kind of feel like a long time coming that this might be the beginning of that playoff road?
I don't know. I mean, you're talking to a guy, I guess it's, I mean, 29, so I could care less about the draft and develop model, but I want to win right now. So I still feel like we have a group here and we have the core to do that. And now it's kind of whoever comes in, the young guys that we have drafted, can jump on board and help our group out. I'm all for it, too.
Interesting comments from Captain Ladd, but no surprise really in what he said, in that they've been talking draft and develop, and they were willing to put up with draft and develop for a few years until they were in a playoff spot, and then they wanted to see some real action, and I think Jets general manager Kevin Cheveldayoff has delivered on that action so far.
I think more importantly, Drew, that's how players think. If Andrew Ladd doesn't think that way, then I'll be more concerned.
Win now.
That's the whole idea. So when they're talking about teams tanking and things like that, I mean, players play to win. And so that's what he's trying to do. And I'm not surprised by his comments. And I think nobody should take that the wrong way. I mean, I look at that as an encouraging sign.
Is he?
Well, the question was, are you excited to be at the beginning of the playoff road? And then his answer touched on draft and develop. So I don't know enough about the context of the question or the answer to really... Well, listen to the question. Are you excited to be at the beginning of a playoff road?
Yeah, he's trying to step up for, like, playoff roads of the future. And Ladd's basically saying, well, that's great, but I want to win now.
Right.
That's what he's saying. So, I mean, again, I think that's what the cap. You want the captain to win now. I mean, the captain doesn't know how long he's going to be there. He's a pending UFA after next season. I mean, again, if the Jets don't win now, if the Jets weren't to make moves that you guys are talking about, for Toulouse and different things, and they were to fall out of the playoffs, I mean, he's probably a goner.
Sure.
So I think it's important. If you want to keep him around, and if he plays, first of all, he's been very good this year, but if he plays as physical as he did last game and plays that way the rest of the season, the Jets are going to be in real good shape.
Let's talk about some trades from earlier this week in and around the NHL. Looks like a trade just coming in right now. Thomas Fleischmann is being dealt to the Anaheim Ducks. Pierre LeBrun just reporting that. We'll get you the return when we have it.
Yeah, Thomas Fleischmann, I mean, that's, he's a guy. The Ducks are kind of adding weird mix on their roster. I mean, they're getting more skilled for sure. That's what they want to do. And we talked about skill on the wings, and that's part of it. We'll talk about it later on in the show, Drew. But is Fleischmann the kind of guy who's going to give you what you want in terms of when it matters most? Is he going to be a guy at crunch time that you want to count on?
Third-round pick going back to Florida along with Danny Heatley.
So they're taking the money because Heatley can't really play anymore. So basically the Panthers have traded Bergenheim and Fleischmann, got 2/3, and then acquired Heatley and Jager and gave up a second and a third. So there's moving parts as far as I'm concerned. I mean, Heatley and Jager both aren't great skaters. I mean, Heatley's probably not going to play at all. I'm not sure if he's injured, but if he's not injured, he can't play anyways, really. Fleischmann and Bergenheim, I mean, I think Bergenheim's more useful than Fleischmann, but both guys that they had signed to get to the bottom of the cap years ago, right?
Yeah.
And, kind of moving parts. Both those teams, I mean, I don't think Florida's making a dent here. Anaheim is Fleischmann's better than Heatley, as he's more useful than Heatley. And the pick, I mean, again, you're trying to win now, so third-round pick.
Yeah, Heatley's been in the AHL for the entire year, so he hasn't been a factor for the Ducks. But, watching last night's game, I mentioned that I watched last night's game, and, you watch Rickard Rakell and Emerson Edom and Yuri Sakach. It's a very good third line, so maybe Fleischmann, they want a little bit more depth on the fourth line. So, to me, he just adds a different element, maybe that, a player like a Tim Jackman, for example, who's more of an enforcer. So to me, Fleischmann, that's a good move. I mean, it just adds more scoring depth.
Sure.
Fleischmann is kind of a guy, I think they're just going to basically say, okay, Fleischmann, Bork, whoever's going, we'll just ride them. Like one of those players. Because Bork got going in the playoffs a couple of years ago here. I mean, they have talent, just you don't know what you're getting. So basically you pit them against each other and say, one of you guys is going to play in a pretty significant role, maybe.
Creates internal competition,
right.
Not a bad thing.
Yeah.
A trade from earlier this week. This happened Thursday, right before the Jets and the Blues game. And probably coming into Thursday, right before this trade, you would have said one of the more untradeable contracts in the NHL is David Clarkson and his $5.25 million cap hit. Well, the Leafs found a taker for him, sending him to the Columbus Blue Jackets in exchange for injured winger Nathan Horton, who has a very similar salary and a similar term, but is going to be on long-term injured reserve. Just a factor, really. Is the biggest reason this trade happened because the Columbus Blue Jackets do not have insurance on Nathan Horton's contract?
It's the only reason it happened. There's no other reason. You can break it down all you want. If they have insurance on the contract, they're not paying it. They don't have to pay it. They don't have to take the hit on against their cap, and they're going to look elsewhere. But because they don't have insurance, they're paying him $5 million a year to not pay. Now, it's not against their cap, but they have an internal cap.
Sure. And they're not a big market team.
And if they're paying $5 million of dead money, and they can get $5 million of maybe value of $2.5 million, it's better than no value at all.
It's my understanding, Richie, maybe you can clarify this, that next year, the Toronto Maple Leafs, if they have long-term injured reserve relief, they don't actually have to count the Nathan Horton contract on the books. But the problem is,
right. You
have to be at a certain salary cap level for that to happen.
I don't believe that's a good question. I don't believe you do. I think if he's on long-term injury reserve, then he's not counting against your cap, but you're paying out his salary. So that's my understanding. And I don't think they're going to be. I heard Dave Nonis say he doesn't expect them necessarily to be a cap team next year. Eventually they will be. That's why they're doing this, and they're making so much money they don't care. I didn't know. I don't know if you might be right. I don't know if there was a provision that it counts against the cap or not at a certain threshold. But I didn't think so.
The point, I mean, to Ezzy's point there, even if it does count on their salary cap next season for Toronto, they won't care because they're not going to be right up against the salary cap.
And Richie's right, though. I mean, the insurance, it's a bizarre situation in the sense that you couldn't insure a guy because of a pre-existing condition. Now, I'm not going to go into the nuances of insurance because I just don't know enough about it, but it seems like the Toronto Maple Leafs wanted to get rid of that Clarkson contract, and the Blue Jackets, Richie, would rather pay a guy that's actually going to play. Clarkson's going to play on the top line of the Blue Jackets tonight.
Well, it's either you pay $5 million for a player who's probably worth $2.5 or $3 or you pay $5 million to a player who's not giving you anything. And if your contract is insured, then you're not paying $5 million. The insurance company is paying $5 million.
Well, what about the salary cap ramifications? I mean, the Blue Jackets
You're not going to be a cap team anyway, so you don't particularly care.
But, I mean, there's...
If you're up against the cap, then you care.
Yeah, but if they have an internal budget, we're only going to spend $50 million on salaries this season.
Right.
And you're now spending $5.25 million of those $50 million,
You were spending on Horton anyways, and he wasn't playing.
Well, but you're spending it, but not on the salary cap. I see what you're saying.
Yeah, money out. That's all they care. That's why if they were a cap team, it's different. But we're talking money out here. What is the owner taking out of his pocket and paying the player? It's the same, but he's actually getting something for it. Now, it's not value. You're not getting $5 million of value from David Clarkson, but you were getting $0 of value from Horton, so $2.5 million or $3 million of value from David Clarkson is better than nothing. And if just so people know, it's not a Toronto genius move. I mean, it's great to be able to move the contract if you're Toronto, but Columbus called Toronto allegedly and said, hey, do you want to do this? So it's not like Toronto, the genius, has thought of some trade. Columbus is like, okay, how can we make use of this deal somewhat?
Yeah, Richie, I think you got to give credit to Jarmo Kekäläinen and Dave Nonis because they both solve problems with this trade, right? And the unfortunate thing is,
yes.
I've always, and I know, Richie, you were too, are too. Nathan Horton's a great hockey player, and the unfortunate part of this is because of this degenerative back issue, a really good hockey player who the Columbus Blue Jackets signed to a long-term contract isn't going to get to play. And I realize that his contract is guaranteed, so he's still going to be paid the full amount of money, but I can tell you with 100% certainty, and I don't know Nathan Horton at all, he would rather be playing hockey.
100%.
I certainly agree with that. Can David Clarkson, what kind of value do you he's out of Toronto. He's back into a market with not a lot of pressure. His contract's his contract, so to just put it behind him, not his fault that somebody signed him to that.
Nobody in Columbus cares. The fans don't care there about his contract. It's not like they're obsessing on it like they did in Toronto.
Right.
And again, it was not a good contract. I mean, we said it when we were doing the coverage July 1. We said it wasn't a good contract 2 years ago. But for whatever reason, Toronto and Edmonton, and that probably explains something, both offered him similar deals. And at the end of the day, what he provides for you is a physical player. He can shoot the puck. He's probably more successful if your team has him on the third line right wing. But he can certainly play second line right wing, guys, depending on the structure of your organization, your roster. He does fit into their mold of physical character guys who can chip in 15 to 20. Foligno, Dubinsky, Hartnell, a lot of those guys are similar that way. You don't want to play that team. I mean, they're going to go through you, not around you. And so he fits the mold. But Horton was like that as well.
Yep.
Now, Horton has a better shooter and more talented and a clutch pass for sure. But overall, I think the move makes sense. As he said, it makes sense for both teams. If you remember years ago, I hope I'm getting the players right, Kyle MacLaren was on the Bruins long-term injury, and I think San Jose took him off their hands, but they took a draft pick with it. And so if you want to value a draft pick and say a draft pick's worth that much, blank amount of money, the alternative would have been to trade the Horton contract with a draft pick. But for Columbus's long-term viability in terms of being successful, they figure we'd rather take this contract back and keep our draft picks.
If I'm not mistaken, it also actually reduces in the amount of cash paid out on a yearly basis. over the next few years. The cap hit stays the same, but Columbus actually has to outlay fewer dollars in actual dollars as the years go on. So it is a diving down number in terms of the actual cash outlays, which is appealing certainly to the Columbus Blue Jackets organization.
I think it goes 5.5. And it goes 4.75 this year, 5.5, and then 7, and then 7, and then 4.7. So goes up and down.
Sure.
Yeah, and Drew, we should make the point. I mean, we talked about this 2 summers ago.
Yeah.
I saw David Clarkson play a lot with New Jersey. He was an effective player. He's someone who was signed to a contract that was ridiculous for his skill set, and that's not his fault. I mean, you offer a guy a long-term contract at, what was it, $5.5 million a year?
Salary cap hit.
So he's a $2.5 million player in today's salary cap
five
world.
5.25, yeah.
Right? So he's making $3 million a year more than he should based on sports economics, right? So it's not his fault. And so everybody was expecting him to be a 30-goal, 60-point guy like he did one season in New Jersey, but he happened to be playing with some better players in New Jersey at that point, right?
Right.
So, I mean, I agree with Richie. You have young players there. Ryan Johansson's a young player. Alexander Wenberg. Marco Dano's been playing a little bit. You've got a young team, so Clarkson and Hartnell are the veteran guys that are going to insulate those young players. And I'm not saying that, you know, David Clarkson's going to be a 60-point guy.
Yeah,
but I mean, he's a guy that will help them, and apparently they're going to trade Cam Atkinson. So, I mean, it's a good move for Columbus.
The Blue Jackets are huge. Hartnell, Dubinsky, Ryan Johansson, Anisimov, Foligno, Clarkson. Like, that is a big team. Like, again, I mean, not the most talented bunch. I mean, those guys all have talent. They're not high. Aside from Johansson, you're not talking high end.
But you're going to feel them.
Richie, when Ryan Murray's healthy, and I realize Dubinsky's injured now, but, you know, you got some young prospects, and I think that team is trending in the right direction. They've lost more man games to injury than anybody.
They have.
They're up there, so.
Even their injury report now, it's like half the page.
Yeah. Now, let's going to break. Let's hear from Bob McKenzie on what he thought on the Clarkson-Horton trade.
Well, it's obviously surprising. I mean, I guess maybe one of the surprising things, too, is that there were probably a number of teams that had talked to the Leafs about Clarkson. But in every scenario, I think it required the Leafs probably having to take back half the money on the deal. People don't think David Clarkson can't play in the National Hockey League. They just don't think he's worth that kind of money. But here's a serendipitous situation for the Toronto Maple Leafs. The Columbus Blue Jackets have Nathan Horton on the sidelines, not likely to ever play again because of a deteriorating back condition, and his contract wasn't insured. So the dollar-conscious budget team in Columbus is paying a guy over $5 million a year to probably never play hockey again. And that's a tough one for them. So they go through the league and they look at players that maybe they could take off somebody else's hands that would help them. And so they look at David Clarkson and say, you know what? He's not worth the money that the Leafs are paying him. He's not worth the money that we'd be paying him if we were able to affect a swap here for Horton for Clarkson. But you know what? He's going to contribute a lot more to our team than Nathan Horton possibly could. So why wouldn't we take an active player, put him in our lineup instead of a guy sitting in the press box? It doesn't hurt us at all. It helps us. And in the Leafs case, the exact opposite is true. You take a player out of the lineup and you create basically cap relief to the tune of Clarkson's money. So it really was a serendipitous thing that worked for both sides.
Here's Jagr with the puck. Jagr, nice move on the backhand. Let's it go. He scores! Well, this is the one thing that team defense cannot defend against. Great individual efforts. He beat one guy, Dirk Graham, then a second player. Now he's going to beat a third hog and make him look bad. But a fantastic individual effort by Jaromir Jagr has tied this game at 4.
A goal scored by Jaromir Jagr way back, we believe, in 1991. Because if you listen to the names mentioned on that clip, he went around Dirk Graham to score that goal. So it would probably be in the Blackhawks-Penguins Stanley Cup Final from way back in the early 90s. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com.
Didn't Graham coach the Hawks for 1 year?
I believe that sounds right. I think he did.
Denny Savard did. The Graham coach?
Like late 90s. Savard late 90s, Graham. Early 2000s.
Trent Yanni?
Yeah, he was a coach. AHL coach, too.
Olchek coached the Penguins?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
He's from Chicago, does TV in Chicago.
Yeah, I know he does TV in Chicago. I just couldn't remember if he coached to Chicago or Pittsburgh there for a second. Anyways, Jaromír Jágr obviously traded earlier this week from the New Jersey Devils, which is no surprise that he was traded. The surprise comes that he was traded to the Florida Panthers, I think, in exchange for a second-round pick and a conditional draft pick in 2016, a conditional third-round draft pick. Your thoughts on the Panthers being the team that acquires Jaromír Jágr?
Well, if I look at it in a vacuum, I don't really particularly understand the move. You're a team competing with Boston, Ottawa, Philly for that last spot. If you get in, I mean, Luongo can conceivably lead to an upset of another team, but if you look at who they're going through, Montreal, the Islanders, I think they'd be in they finished last in the conference. I think you're looking at an uphill battle there, right? So overall, I think, Jágr's an older guy, obviously, we know that, and he slows down a bit during the end of the season, and he's not the best skater, and I think at the beginning of the season, he's more of an effective player. So a second-round pick, which is, 30 or 40 to 50, that's a pretty high price to pay. So I don't particularly like the move. I don't think it's necessary for Florida. I think the Devils did well here. Not only they can draft better than they have in the past many years, really, that's the reason why they're struggling right now with a bunch of veterans on their roster. If you look at it, take a little bit of a step back, and as we did earlier in the show, Bergenheim and Fleischmann for two-thirds, then you're doing two-thirds out for a second and a conditional third. It doesn't look as bad. So you're going down a round in the draft. This second round certainly, obviously, and goes without saying, is more impact than a third-round pick. But in any event, it's not as bad when you look at it that way, and Jágr is a more effective player offensively than both Bergenheim and Fleischmann are. So I can see that point.
Florida's 4 points behind Boston for the final wild card spot. Realistically, they're 5 points behind because they also don't have the tiebreaker, and they're not going to get the tiebreaker, having only 20 regulation and overtime wins, which is actually third fewest in the entire Eastern Conference. So acquiring Jágr, fine. Giving up a second-round pick when it's unlikely you're going to make the playoffs seems like a high price to pay at that point in time.
Right, and we should say a few things, too. Jaromír Jágr is going to make his debut this afternoon against Buffalo. As far as Florida's chances of making the playoffs, I agree with Richie. I think they're a long shot. If you look at their schedule, though, including the game against Buffalo, they've got 5 home games coming up. The last game of that homestand is against the Jets, and you've got a few easy games in there. You've got one against Toronto. So, it's a little bit of an easier schedule, but I still don't think Boston's going to fall out there. It's funny, Boston beat New Jersey last night in overtime. It's one of those moves, Richie. For me, I look at it and I say, well, Lou Lamoriello did pretty good because most likely Jágr was probably not coming back next year, or there was a good chance he wasn't coming back. Mm-hmm. So you get a second rounder and a third rounder. Right? Because, we'll get to the Devils later when we start previewing teams, but all the Devils want to do right now is stockpile draft picks. I mean, I'm a New Jersey Devils fan, you know that, but this team is rebuilding.
Yeah.
I mean, so if someone takes Michael Ryder, okay, great. If someone wants Marek Zidlicky for a draft pick, have him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Devils are, there's no reason to keep anybody right now. Obviously, they're not going to trade. There's some untouchables, I'd say. Adam Henrique is an untouchable. They're probably not moving Zajac. I mean, there's some players that they're...
They move Zajac, I bet.
I think there's a possibility. I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah.
I'll give you that much. But I think that, Zajac will get traded in the next hour now. But as far as the New Jersey Devils are concerned, I mean, to get a second and a third rounder, I mean, Lamoriello's, first of all, you notice that Lamoriello's still behind the bench? I mean, that's how bad the season has been. I don't know what he's doing behind the bench, why he doesn't give it to Scott Stevens or Adam Oates. But anyways, that's another story for another show. But, the thing with on the other side for Florida, Richie, you mentioned, you take the risk that Jágr provides you offense and gets you over the hump into the playoffs. But the interesting that Dale Tallon said, well, if Jágr likes it here, we might sign him.
Well, no better place to retire than Florida.
It's not a bad... Exactly. If you're going to keep playing, you might as well play in Florida at that point in time.
And they are a young team, Drew, and they do have two really good young centers in Barkov and Bukestad. So if you want him to mentor...
Yeah, he could mentor them, certainly.
I think he fits in a little bit better with Barkov than Bukestad, though they use Barkov a little bit more of a defensive role because Bukestad's a fast player and he plays kind of an up-and-down game. He's a good shooter.
Just even work ethic-wise.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, then yeah, I know that for sure. And I think that's an important part. But yeah, I don't think Jágr with Bjugstad makes a lot of sense, because Bjugstad is a shooter and a speed guy, and Jágr would slow him down a bit. That was one of the problems, if you remember, in Dallas, and that they wanted to play a little more of a fast-paced up-and-style game, up-and-down game, and Jágr liked to go a little bit more east-west.
It's unbelievable, though, Richie. I got to say, like, I watch the Devils a lot, and he only has 11 goals and 29 points this year, which is remarkable for a 43-year-old. Mm-hmm. And he could probably play one more year and get 30, 35 points. I mean, on another team, a better team, he'd get more than 29 points. The Devils have had a horrendous year. But, you know, Richie mentions he slows it down. He really does, but you still can't get the puck off of him.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. Like, I mean, yeah, he still has that reach and that strength. So it's incredible. And
old man strength at this point in time. Another trade from yesterday.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Brought to you by.
Chicago Blackhawks acquire veteran defenseman Kimmo Timonen from the Flyers in exchange for a 2015 second-round pick and a conditional fourth-round pick in 2016, which could become a third or a second, depending on how the Blackhawks do in the playoffs. It's a big price to pay, in my mind, for a guy who hasn't played this year.
Yeah, that's the thing, Drew. I mean, if Timonen's healthy, of course, you're fixing... Well, it's an odd trade. So let's take a step back, okay? And let's go into the season, and let's look at the Nicoletti trade, okay? So they traded Nick Leddy. Chicago did, to the Islanders, okay? For, you know, certain players that people aren't going to really know who these players are, but, you know, Nielsen and et cetera, and Brandon, a bunch of different stuff. And basically, you're trading Leddy, okay, for kind of the fact that you're going to have to spend money later on him, and you're not sure what you're going to do, and he's a pending RFA, okay? And then, so you trade a puck-moving left-side defenseman. I know Joel Quenneville didn't always trust him, but obviously he's had a great season, just signed a big deal, and we with the Islanders for 7 years. So you have a young guy, left-side defenseman, pending RFA. And you trade him for some pieces, and then you trade picks for the exact player mold of a player that you dealt, who's older and hasn't played a game this year. That's an odd... Again, it fits a need, and they're trying to win now. And they do not trust their bottom two. I mean, they do not trust David Rundblad. They will play Timonen and Roosevelt, if Roosevelt's healthy. I think he's healthy now, on the bottom pairing and feel comfortable about it, because Timonen's more of a puck mover, and Roosevelt's a bigger guy, and so that seems to work all right. Okay? So overall, I mean, I understand what they're trying to do here, Roosevelt, and as a pending UFA as well. If you look, take a step back, it's an odd kind of plan, you know, trade young guy who you're not going to sign when you could have got a year out of him and then traded him after and got picks instead of trading any picks away. So that's the odd part. Philly does well here. I mean, a guy who's not helping you at all. If you look at Philly and you think, oh, and we'll talk about Philly later, but Philly doesn't have as much roster flexibility as you'd hope for a team that seems to be kind of middling. So overall, I think Philly does well here. In Chicago, it's a little bit puzzling at a big picture level. If you look at it from today, they address a need that will help them in the playoffs.
I think they're panicking a little bit in Chicago. And I think, you know, Johnny Oduya has been injured. Trevor Van Riemsdyk was injured, who they thought could fill the role of Nick Leddy. And I think they undervalued what Nick Leddy meant to the team. We talked to Arthur Staple about that. I mean, he just signed a 7-year deal with the Islanders. And you could say that maybe it was a little bit too many years, and I think I did. But he's at the point being, it's tough to replace Nick Leddy, a puck-moving defenseman like that. But... So you're looking at Chicago Blackhawks. Oduya is supposed to come back, but you're not sure how effective he's going to be. So to me, Kimmo Timonen, you know, he might be in his mid to late 30s now.
Yeah, 39. And they expect him to be his final year in the NHL.
But this is still a guy that's, I mean, he's still even, I mean, we've seen Andre Markov in Montreal, I mean, who's getting older now, not as old. But, I mean, Kimmo Timonen, I think they're saying, okay, well, now we have more depth. He's a guy that he won't play much top 4 minutes, especially right off the bat. We should mention that he was ready to go for the Philadelphia Flyers.
Yes.
So Kimmo Timonen can go in and play now. I think they're a little bit worried because they have, as Richie mentioned, Rundblad, Tim Erickson, Kyle Kuminski was playing last night. You know, they have some of these younger guys. They're not sure once you get in a playoff series. You know, Kimmo Timonen's a guy that's been there with Nashville and Philadelphia. So, you know, I think with the Patrick Kane injury and some other injuries here on defense, Chicago's getting a little worried that they don't have that veteran depth that they've had in previous years.
You just traded picks for a guy you had, basically. That's the odd part about it.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we spend the next 2 hours with the comprehensive NHL trade deadline preview, team by team, division by division. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. some people would say the show is a regular car crash, but in any event, welcome back. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Paul and Ezra Ginsberg. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. Spending the next 2 hours going division by division, team by team, getting you set for Monday's NHL trade deadline. Complete comprehensive coverage of trade deadline 2015, of course, here on TSN 1290 on Monday. Richard, you're going to be on with Rick from 11 a.m. till 3 p.m., if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
And then, of course, the big show in the morning, H&L, after that. And then we're going to wrap it up with a special Monday edition of NHL Midweek on TSN 1290. Trade Center, of course, here on TSN 1290. Let's start with the team we left off on previous segment, the Chicago Blackhawks. Acquire Kimmo Timonen, filling a need on the back end that I think we all agree was there before.
Yeah, for sure.
The big wild card to the Blackhawks is the injury to Patrick Kane. You know, and that's sort of a two-part question. One, can they fill, to some degree, the role that Patrick Kane was playing on the team?
No.
And two, even if he was healthy, did they have a need that they needed to address up front?
Well, if you have a need, you want a need to address it.
Right. Did they have a need to address up front?
Of course, Drew. I think... Drew, if they, again, you look at this roster as compared to other rosters, you say, there's not really a need here. If you're trying to be a little picky, you say, okay, do they want to upgrade over Brad Richards maybe in that second center slot? I think probably. And that's why a guy, you know, you look at a guy like an Antoine Vermette who can play center and wing, who can play in different spots in your lineup. So I think their need is a top six center or winger, depending on, you know, what's available. If a guy can play both, tremendous. Do they need? Like, that's their need. But is it a must? No. I don't think that it's bust if they don't acquire a player like that, but they'd like to acquire a player like that. Now, we should mention, there's rumors Patrick Sharp is on the market, and we've heard those rumors for a while, but Chris Cook of the Chicago Tribune has mentioned that the Hawks have been in discussions with the Washington Capitals, and Sharp's under contract for 2 years after this year.
See that happening, Rich? Them trading Patrick Sharp with Patrick Kane out until the playoffs?
I guess it depends, Ezzy. On what they get, it always depends on what they get in return because they want to save money against the cap. And if he's making, 5.9 over the next 2 years, like each year on a cap, and he's 33 years old, it's probably better to trade him earlier rather than later. And he hasn't been as productive as he's been in the past. And do you like what Tuovo Teravainen can provide? So there's factors there, but you need to get a player back, Ez. You need to get a cheap player back, but you need to get a skilled, talented player back. So, I mean, this could all be talk. Who knows? But the way. To your point, is Sharp a guy they move after acquiring a guy like Timonen for a second-round pick when you're clearly going for it this year in some ways? And Kelly Chase on Wednesday's show talked about the windows for these teams. I don't know. I mean, maybe it's a little bit contradictory, but you also have to be able to compete now and compete later. So I think there is a possibility they make some big moves or a possibility they make no moves, and I still like their team either way.
Yeah, Richie, it's clear, especially with the Kimmo Timonen acquisition, that the need is on forward and... You know, you mentioned Antoine Vermette, a player who may be moved, may not be moved. He's a pending UFA, right? Mm-hmm. So that fills your center need if you decide to get him because he can either play second or third line center with Brad Richards as the second or third line center. And then you've also heard a guy that they really want is Cam Atkinson on the Columbus Blue Jackets. And you hear maybe they might be interested in a guy like Curtis Glennacross. To me, you know, all these guys can be top nine, not necessarily top six. Because even without Kane, I mean, you've got Brandon Saad's having an underrated year, really like him. And you mentioned Teuvo Teravainen, who, you know, hasn't quite excelled at the NHL level, and they've had him back and forth between the AHL and NHL. But point being that in the playoffs, you'll give a guy like that some opportunity. And we've seen guys like Brian Bickle in the past score big goals for the Chicago. Like, this team has depth, and they've been there. They have the experience. So I think you're right. And Vermette, to me, does seem like a really good fit. And, you know, a guy like Atkinson I like, and he's obviously not having the greatest year. Nobody is on Columbus. Maybe they also go after another defenseman. Because I know Richie mentioned their depth. I mean, the strength of this team for years was they always had the best group of defensemen.
For sure.
Like Oduya, Jarmelson, Letty, and Roosevelt. And, you know, so to me, you know, when you take out Letty and you take out Oduya, and Van Riemsdyk, of course, James Van Riemsdyk's brother, who was supposed to get a lot of ice time and then he was injured. they've really, the name of the game in the Western Conference is you got to be able to move the puck. LA had troubles with that when Voinov was suspended, and Colorado and Dallas, that was their downfall. So, you know, Chicago, if they want to compete with the Anaheims and you know, the elite teams, the Nashvilles, you know, they got to be able to move the puck out of their own zone.
I think Tanguay could fit there if they do trade Sharp, if they have two moving parts, because Tanguay could fit into the style of play that they want to play. And he's one more year in his contract, so yeah. I know they don't want a lot of money next year, but if they move a guy out who's got money next year, they can bring a guy in with money next year.
Sure. Moving to St. Louis, the team that we saw here on Thursday night, and most likely Chicago's first-round playoff opponent in the Central Division.
Again,
yeah, year after year. The Blues, you know, right side puck moving defenseman and some speed up front.
Those are their needs, in my opinion. Why? Because Shattenkirk's not there, and we don't know when he's going to be back. Kelly Chase wasn't sure, and he follows the team on a daily basis. You can clearly see that there's a need there when it comes to helping replace that puck moving ability, as in power play proficiency that he brings to the table. So yeah, you know, maybe a guy like Jeff Petrie is in the mix there. I don't know if they want to give it up. I don't know if they want to give up as much for him because Shattenkirk may come back, but somebody who can move the puck on a right side guy would be helpful for them. I think also they like to get one more guy up front who can skate a bit, you know, like, and Steve Ott and Marcel Gott, like those guys in that fourth line. You wonder if they want to get a little bit faster and get in your face a little bit more. And I know everybody seems to fit their style, but I would personally like to see them get a little bit more speed. But they may just say they want to be consistent throughout, kind of like Los Angeles is, and stay with that big... the problem is, of course, no Jonathan Quick, but that big style of play that allows their, you know, not many shots against every game.
Well, speaking of Jeff Petrie, you just mentioned him, likely to be traded by the Oilers. A healthy scratch today. Obviously, the Oilers do not want to risk him getting injured between now and the trade deadline on Monday. So Petrie will not play for the Oilers tonight against, where are the Oilers? Against St. Louis tonight?
They're in home against St. Louis.
Yeah, so there you go. The Blues might see an up-close and personal Jeff Petrie. Ezzie, your thoughts on what the Blues need to acquire and you know, come Monday for the trade deadline?
Yeah, it's similar to what Richie was saying. I don't think that the Blues are going to make too many moves. I mean, you saw them trade LaPierre to Pittsburgh for Gotch. That was about, what, 3 or 4 weeks ago?
Mm-hmm.
And this team is pretty set. They're not playing as well. Yeah. We talked about that going back to the Jets game earlier this week. They're not playing as well as they were earlier in the season, definitely before the All-Star break. But, you know, it's really dependent, you know, on Kevin Shattenkirk's health, obviously, Richie. You know, that fourth line, I think it's not the fastest, but I think, you know, Gotch is still a pretty good defensive player, and Ott can throw it around, maybe not as much. So maybe, yeah, they bring in someone who can add a little bit of speed and scoring to that fourth line.
Well, just forget about Chicago, as you got, I mean, that's the one thing, like, that's a fast-paced game. Can you keep up?
Yeah, that's a good point.
And they looked light last year when they played them. They looked like they couldn't keep up, and then Miller and the goaltending didn't help give them any help either.
Right, and to me, that's the issue, and I know Rich has mentioned this numerous times over the course of this season with Brian Elliott. Like, St. Louis hasn't had a goalie that's really stole a series in a really long time. And, you know, Grant, is it the Grant Fuhr days?
Yeah.
Like, when was the last time, like, a goalie needs to steal a series for you?
Well, that would be a need for on St. Louis. That's a need. St. Louis, maybe, goalie is a need, but I just don't think they're going to address it.
No, they're not going to address it. Yeah. And you know, Jake Allen and Brian Elliott have essentially been splitting starts.
I personally don't trust Brian Elliott in the playoffs.
They have good, Jake Allen is still unproven in terms of his playoff performance. And Brian Elliott is a very good regular season goaltender who's never done it in the playoffs. He's never outplayed the goaltender he's faced in the playoffs.
And that's the biggest question mark to me. And as Richie mentioned, like, are you going to address that? Are you going to make a trade and give up something significant for a number one bona fide goalie?
They did it last year. They thought they did it last year.
Exactly. When usually history doesn't repeat itself when you're a general manager, right?
Sure.
So if you tried it with Ryan Miller, who in 2010 basically stole the Olympics for the U.S., didn't win the gold medal. But, I mean, it didn't work in that case. So are you going to bring in a Craig Anderson and do that or something? I don't think so.
Nashville, the team that's been leading the Central Division all season long.
I don't mind that idea, Izzy.
The Craig Anderson idea?
They can make it work, yeah. I don't mind that idea.
Breaking, Craig Anderson has just been traded to the team.
Nashville, obviously, made a big splash earlier a couple weeks ago, acquiring Mike Santorelli and Cody Franzen.
Yeah.
You think that they do something else? I mean, they obviously seem to be all in, thinking they might, you know, they've been at the top of the Western Conference all season long, might as well win the conference at this point.
Well, I mean, you know, and try and make it in the playoffs, Drew. I just don't know what they're trading, right? They traded their first-round pick. Does David Poile want to make another move? You look at their roster, I think they could still add a top-six skating winger. I think that would certainly be a help to them. You want to maybe push down a guy like Matt Cullen down the depth chart a little bit and some of the other guys that they rely on, and a guy who can score a bit. So there are not a ton of those guys. Like a guy like Curtis Glencross would fit really well into what Nashville's trying to do in that. And I know, you know, he hasn't maybe fared as well and obviously has some injury problems, but that'd be a kind of player. And Eric Cole, even. That makes some sense, actually. Yep. Eric Cole would make some sense in Nashville. So somebody like that, you can play in your top six or top nine, score a bit, and just push guys down like Matt Cullen who aren't, you know, the fleetest of foot anymore and not as scoring, not don't maybe have the scoring touch they once did.
Right, and Richie, this team is on its way right now to winning the President's Trophy, first in the NHL, and, you know, that trade, we talked about it when it happened. I think Nashville right now, they already had an excellent defense. I think they have the most, you know, imposing group of defensemen in the NHL. When you throw in not only Shea Weber and Roman Josi, but Seth Jones now, Cody Franzen, just an excellent group of defensemen. So Richie's probably right. If you are going to make a move, if you're David Poile, you might bring in a veteran forward. And, you know, I was even thinking, you know, maybe Chris Stewart fits in there. But they already got Santarelli there, who's now playing on the third line. And basically that's, you know, a move that maybe they think that's enough there. I mean, maybe. It's a pretty deep team. You know, Gostad and Nystrom there on the fourth line. It's a deep team, and I wouldn't be surprised if they don't make any moves or if it's a minor move.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look at the other teams in the Central Division and discuss what we think they're going to do ahead of Monday's NHL trade deadline. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN 1290. Hey! You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are previewing the NHL's trade deadline coming up on Monday. This segment of the program is brought to you by Royal Sports since 1974. Royal Sports has been Winnipeg's number one hockey shop, plus so much more, like soccer to snowboards, for location, hours, and more. Check them out online at royalsports.me. Gentlemen, continuing with our analysis of the Central Division, let's go to the Minnesota Wild, just below the Winnipeg Jets in the race for the final wild card spots. Wild have already made a trade, acquiring Sean Bergenheim from the Florida Panthers. That happened earlier this week. Well, you know, what do you think the Wild are looking to do? What areas do you think they need to upgrade entering Monday's trade deadline?
Well, you mentioned that they went out and they acquired Sean Bergenheim from the Florida Panthers, left winger there, and he has the ability to play in their top six. But I think that, you know, if you're the Minnesota Wild, and obviously Devan Dubnyk has really turned their season around, Richie, you know, Josh Hardy not playing this year, and then Darcy Kemper having the injury problems. So Devan Dubnyk has been phenomenal and really got Minnesota back into this playoff discussion, right? So, you know, back to your question, though, I think if you're the Minnesota Wild, I think to me it's more trying to maybe get a defenseman in there, and not necessarily a defenseman that you would quote-unquote call a top four defenseman, because I know that there are defensemen out there. So you've got Mike Green as a possibility. You've got Keith Yandle out there. You've got Jeff Petrie. But to me, you know, the Wild D is pretty set there. Suter, Brodin, Scandella, and Spurgeon. But to me, you know, you go down and Christian Follin has taken a little bit while to get going there. So to me, you maybe get a depth defenseman, or you maybe try to bring in a top nine guy, a veteran guy.
Well, you got Spurgeon with these concussion like symptoms. So I mean, you don't have Spurgeon in the top four. You got a real big hit there. And how do you address that, right? I mean, you don't really. I mean, Follin and Prosser and Ballard's hurt, but he wouldn't be able to fit that.
Dumba's been playing in there.
Yeah, Dumba has been. And he's, you know, kind of similar player, not the level that Spurgeon is. May certainly has the ability to get there, though, as he. And he's played alongside Scandella, as you mentioned. So you want to add a defenseman. I think you want to add a veteran defenseman, preferably one who can play the left side, but you'll probably take one either way. Up front, I mean, you have a pretty good stable of forwards. Could you maybe benefit from a kind of a bigger or faster right winger, maybe than Jordan Trader? Yeah, probably. But overall, probably bigger, to be honest. And
they've resuscitated Jordan Schrader's career.
Yeah, I mean,
he was a first-round pick out of Vancouver who obviously did nothing, and he's, you know, hasn't been world killer in Minnesota by any stretch, but he's getting minutes, and you know, which he never did get in Vancouver.
They could use a little more of an edge up front, and maybe even some speed as well. So either one of those needs would be probably helpful to address with their roster, but they certainly play that style under Mike Yeo quite well.
Do you think they're going to end up getting in?
Yeah, I do. I wrote them off on this show, so I'm surprised. But San Jose seems to be fading, and I actually like Calgary more than I like Minnesota. But Giordano, if he's in or if he's out, is a huge factor there. So, and they play a lot of road games. So we'll see. It's certainly no guarantee, but they look a lot better than they did before.
Sure.
Wouldn't that be amazing if five teams from the Central got in?
That happened last year.
Yeah, same thing. Yeah,
I know, but based on the teams that are making it this year,
right?
Two teams that didn't make it last year,
sure,
and still five teams get in. So
yeah,
the Pacific Division definitely isn't as strong as it once was. But, you know, talking about some of the moves they've made, obviously getting Devan Dubnyk in and Bergenheim again, do you want to make, you know, you signed Vanek to the big contract. Do you want to bring in someone else there? You know, and Nito Niederreiter starting to play a little bit better. He scored tons of goals in the early part of the season, then went invisible there. So
I think he just got his 20th earlier in the week.
Yeah, and he was on pace for like over 30 goals earlier in the season. It's tough to say what the Minnesota Wild are going to do because they've made their moves already. Really, if you think about it, similar to the Jets, addressing the goaltending, addressing the secondary scoring. I think Richie's right. Like Chris Stewart, a guy that can crash and bang. Do you want him in there, maybe to play on the third line or something like that? So. Probably, again, not an earth-shattering move is probably coming from Chuck Fletcher.
Colorado Avalanche seem as though they're definitely not going to make the playoffs. They have a couple of free agents pending. Danny Briere, one of them, played 1 year there. They acquired him from Montreal.
He's not going to help anybody in the playoffs. He's not. He's done, unfortunately.
Yeah. Jan Hede, a guy, left-side defenseman who potentially could help some teams in the playoffs.
He absolutely could help some teams in the playoffs. Drew, the kind of guy who you want in a playoff battle. Not your best skater, but he plays a simple game. He can be mean, and he's physical. Not going to help you ton offensively. So he's going to be a guy that would help a team, and I would think would get moved, Drew. He could fit in Minnesota. You know, like you could go through a bunch of teams that he could help. I mean, San Jose needs depth on the back end. Are they going to what are they going to do? And we're going to talk about them. So there are teams I think in Hayda will get moved. Colorado's needs are just top nine players. They need help up front after their top six. Forward-wise, because they're top-heavy for sure, and they need defensemen. And I know Hayda is a defenseman. I'm talking long-term, they need defensemen. So they need picks, players, they need everything.
The big question here is, does Ryan O'Reilly get moved?
That's what I was going to say next.
He's got, I stole from you.
You did?
He's got 1 year left on his contract, as we know here, at I believe it's $5 million, $5.5 million, whatever it is. And if he's available, Richie, like I'm not saying that Joe Sakic hasn't been taking calls or calling teams, he might be, he might not be. But to me, like that would be the biggest player to move. I know you hear you hear GM saying that, you know, there aren't going to be players that can significantly change a team. Like Ryan O'Reilly hasn't had as good of a year as he'd liked, but really who has on Colorado? Nathan MacKinnon hasn't.
Nope.
Gabriel Landeskog hasn't. Like the guys Duchesne that were getting hasn't. It done, Duchesne hasn't. So, you know, the key guys from the team, key forwards from the team last year just haven't had good seasons. But to me, you know, are you going to risk losing Ryan O'Reilly next summer? And to me, like, you've heard him linked to Calgary. And why was he linked to Calgary? Calgary signed him to an offer sheet. So does a team like Calgary want to take a risk and go after him and try to make that last push to the playoffs? I think a lot of teams would like to add a guy like Ryan O'Reilly. Do you think the Chicago Blackhawks wouldn't like to have a guy like Ryan O'Reilly?
Well, I mean, cap problems, though, Ezzy, what do they do about it? You know, like, I think Pittsburgh and I think Washington, probably those two teams would be interested in. But what are you giving up? Well, you got to give up young defensemen.
Yeah, you mentioned
probably two.
Yeah, you mentioned cap problems, and the thing about with a lot of those teams, you know, the Blackhawks, the Penguins, you know, their cap problems aren't necessarily disappearing come next season.
Not if it's $69 million.
Not if it's the cap is $69 million, like a lot of people expect it's going to be, because the NHLPA may choose not to use their automatic 5% escalator in the salary cap because of escrow reasons. We don't want to get into it because it's confusing and it makes your head melt. But if all of a sudden the salary cap is less than it is this year, a lot of those teams that thought maybe they could get through this year and then they'd have some flexibility won't have that flexibility. But I agree with you, Ezzy. Ryan O'Reilly sort of is one of the big-name wild cards when it comes to this trade deadline, in that, you know, is this a guy 1 year left after this season? Is this a guy that Colorado determines they cannot re-sign or will not re-sign, whatever they choose? And do they think they get the best offer for him, you know, before Monday rather than, say, you know, at the NHL draft?
Right, and there's always the chance, Richie, that he doesn't get moved. But I'm saying, like, when you look at, you know, all the other players that are out there, I think he has the ability to make way more of an impact, no disrespect to Antoine Vermette. But to me, a guy like O'Reilly, still very young, 23 years old, 24 years old, he has the ability you know, not only to score, but he's a guy who's physical, goes in the corners. Like, this is a good – there's a reason why he got that big contract. So, to me, you hear Montreal really likes Ryan O'Reilly. You know, I think there's a lot of teams that would love to have Ryan O'Reilly on their team. And
Montreal makes sense.
And the thing is, you got to give up a lot, though, Richie. If you're if you're talking about Jágr potentially, you know, getting a couple of high draft picks, Ryan O'Reilly, is going to get a roster player and a high draft pick and maybe even a prospect.
You need two young defensemen. Quickly, as he was right earlier, the long-term injury reserve for the savings, you have to be up against the top of the cap to be able to actually place him on there. But the benefit's the same for Toronto.
Well, I'd like to take claim for my big brain, but I heard Dreger talking about it, so it wasn't me that...
Larry Brooks clarified it.
Yeah.
Last team in the Central Division, the Dallas Stars. They have two pending unrestricted free agents in Sean Horkoff and Eric Cole.
Both will go, I think. Horkoff can help your fourth line, leadership, grit. I mean, he doesn't skate as well as he once does, but he's willing to go into the battle, into the corners. Eric Cole will help. I mean, he'll help somebody's top nine. Certainly, speed-wise, can score a bit, go to the net, and they don't have a ton of, those are the only two pending UFAs, but they need size up front. They're too small. They came through town in Winnipeg. They're too small. They need size and skill, more size than skill, frankly, but obviously you don't want to just size, and they need some defensemen. They need to help their top four there, and they're not going to get those two big things for Cole or Horkoff, but if they do move another piece as well, they might be able to get something like that.
Yeah, it's... Dallas hung on there for quite a long time, and then you know the loss against the Jets was almost like the you know the beginning of the end of their season there. Tough loss for Lindy Ruff.
They're behind Colorado now.
That Detroit loss, as he was one of the applicator goal that pushed him, pushed Letton, and that was when their season was done. But they don't buy into Lindy Ruff's way. They play a fun style, but they play however they want to play.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think, and you know, the goaltending hasn't been as good. As you mentioned, the defense problems have been well documented.
Yeah.
So yeah, we've talked about Eric Cole for quite a long time now, he's always an option to be moved. And Sean Horkoff again is another guy that could possibly move. But you're probably not going to move anyone significant, knowing that your defense is rebuilding. John Klingberg's been a really nice piece for the Dallas Stars. You know, that's probably solidified, I guess, the defense for now. But that's something you'll probably have to address in the summer.
I could see them moving Goligoski too. Yeah, I could see them moving Goligoski. He's a $4.6 million cap at UFA after next season. Moves the puck. They got enough guys like Goligoski, kind of soft guys, move the puck. They need to get a little bit tougher, and a guy like him could help an NHL roster. Certainly could, and he could play on your power play. So I could see him being a kind of a wild card guy that gets thrown in the mix. And you remember, he's only 28 years old too. So
they haven't been happy with Hemsky all season. Do you think there's a possibility that somebody might want to acquire notwithstanding?
No.
Speed doesn't appeal to anybody. Skill.
It's not speed, Drew. It's
skill. Sorry, I meant
it's soft. He's a great stick handler. He sees the ice well, but he handles the puck for too long. And for the playoffs, it's the last time you want him.
All righty, let's head to break. When we come back, we'll shift our focus to the Pacific Division as we go division by division, team by team. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This is our trade deadline special on TSN 1290.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Brought to you by MTS.